Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Julio Diaz joins us. He is the founder of Let's Go, or the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook, and also the host of Let's Go Pensacola Saturdays at 4 o'clock. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, morning, Andrew. Well, I guess I technically am the founder of Let's Go Pensacola.
Yeah, you're the founder of a lot of things. You're the originator, the innovator, the creative one. 28 years later, The Bone Temple. This is number 4 in the series?
Right. So we had 28 days later, and then we had 28 months later, and then 28 years later, or 28 weeks later,
right.
I think was the second one. I always get it mixed up, but the second one is one I haven't seen. So now that we've revived this world that was created, of course, by the screenwriter Alex Garland and the director Danny Boyle, who both came back for 28 years later last year. Now they're doing spin-off films within that world, and this is the first one they've done. This is directed by Nia DaCosta, who is a very acclaimed director. Had a little bit of a misstep with the Marvels that a lot of people didn't love. Didn't seem to really work in the Marvel system. But before that, did the really great revival of the Candyman films.
Okay.
So she's a really interesting director. And apparently she's hit it out of the park with this one. Starts Ralph Fiennes. And this is one of those where, you know, the world sees that maybe and they don't call them zombies in these, even though they technically are zombies. But the zombies are not the scariest thing out there.
No, of course.
The scariest thing out there. Which is, you know, there's something to that.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. But fantastic reviews on this, 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. We've also got, let's see, Dead Man's Wire.
Yes, this is from Gus Van Sant, another very acclaimed director who's done a lot of very interesting films over the years, from everything from My Own Private Idaho to Good Will Hunting. Yeah, Good Will Hunting. That's I'm trying to remember the name of it. I thought I was about to get it wrong, but Good Will Hunting. Does a lot of very interesting films. This stars Bill Skarsgård. This is set in the 70s, and it's about a man who breaks into a mortgage company and takes the head of the mortgage company hostage with a shotgun that is wired to a trigger in his neck.
Okay.
Kind of got that late 70s, not as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore, kind of,
right.
You know, network, Dog Day Afternoon
Falling
kind of
down.
Vibe to it. Yeah. Great. Again, fantastic reviews on this. This is one that I think they thought might have been an Oscar contender. It doesn't seem like it's made its way into that award sphere, but it was certainly in the conversation before all the ancillary awards started coming out. 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And we have an animation film, All You Need Is Kill.
Yeah, so some people may have seen the film Edge of Tomorrow, which was also when it was re-released on home video. They changed the title to Live, Die, Repeat because apparently people didn't understand the title. But
that's the Emily Blunt, Tom Cruise, right?
Yeah,
kill the aliens who attack your memories, all that stuff. Yeah, great movie.
Yeah, they die, they reawaken in the same day, and they, you know, get the do-over. So that film was based on a manga. On a Japanese comic.
Okay.
This is an anime adapting that comic and maybe a little bit more faithful adaptation of that manga. Fantastic reviews on this as well, 95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
So what I heard you say is it's The Edge of Tomorrow with no Emily Blunt. That's how you're selling me?
I mean, you could take that as a selling point if that's a selling point
that's
for you.
That's not a selling
not
point.
Necessarily,
that's a flaw.
Or you could say, because there are people that don't think he's the bee's knees, it's Edge of Tomorrow without Tom Cruise.
I see. Okay, I see what you've done there.
Yeah.
We are just completely out of time, but we have Night Patrol, The Coral, Ellie the Wonder Dog, Sheepdog, and Signing Tony Ramone. Any one of these that stands out to you as a need mention?
The Coral is the other Ralph Fiennes film of the week. We're getting a double dose of Ralph Fiennes this week.
Well, who doesn't need more Ralph Fiennes?
Yeah, and I think this is one that, again, they thought might have been an Oscar contender, but the reviews ended up not coming out so great. Post-World War One, a British men's choral has lost basically all of its men to the war and is trying to rebuild. And the new choir master has a hidden past.
Okay. Well, who doesn't need a good war singing drama? I think that's what we all need for sure. What are you going to watch next week, Julio?
Unfortunately, next week is looking like kind of a typical January where there's a couple of, we got to get these things out here, films going out there. So we'll see.
Very good. Julio Diaz, again, the host of the Pensacola Movie Club. You can follow them on Facebook. Also the host and founder, and also the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock here on Saturdays on News Radio. Julio, as always, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, Andrew.
All right. Find out coming up next why Brother Andrew doesn't like the college football playoff in the Transgressive Memorial Service. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by ECUA. Bulkway Services now call for pickup. Call by 2 p.m. the day before your service day. You can learn more at ecua.fl.gov. Still rolling accident-free right now, even delay-free. Everything is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. Add more road to your trip with the new 2026 Subaru Crosstrek or Forester Hybrid. Our new hybrids will keep you going no matter where the road goes. With up to 597 miles per tank, the Crosstrek Hybrid easily takes you to more places. And the Forester Hybrid sports a driving range of up to 581 miles per tank. Mileage like that lets you journey farther. And combined with Subaru's legendary capability of standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, you'll be able to handle any unexpected conditions and terrain with ease. Paved roads, gravel roads, just about any road, they're all fair game in the new 2026 Subaru Hybrid. Better fuel economy, legendary reliability, you'll find both in the Subaru Crosstrek Hybrid and Subaru Forester Hybrid. Love goes the extra mile at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Making the wrong choice can be very costly. Choosing the wrong plumbing company can cost you a lot of money. Hi, I'm Judy Lacey with Barbieri Plumbing, and we've been repairing Pensacola's plumbing problems for over 50 years. We are the local originator of the flat rate pricing system, so you don't have to pay by the hour, and there are no surprises. When you need a plumber, make the right choice and call Barbieri Plumbing. We will make your plumbing great again.
License number RF11067749.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weekdays 2 till 4, right after Markley Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, who this week during a hearing on the alleged dangers of abortion pills, or what we like to call pharmaceuticals for childlessness-affirming care, verbally assaulted OBGYN Dr. Nisha Verma by repeating the same question over and over.
Dr. Verma, I wasn't sure I understood your answer to Senator Moody a moment ago. Do you think that men can get pregnant?
Now, obviously, Dr. Verma realized that Hawley was using a gotcha question and pandering to his base in an effort to create a viral video for X or Untruth Social. That's why she wisely and persistently refrained from giving him a yes-no answer. But no matter how many times she tried to push back and protest against his absurdly reductivist question, he just kept asking over...
Yeah, I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
Well, the goal is just the truth. So can men get pregnant?
And over.
You just said a moment ago that science and evidence should control, not politics. Absolutely. So let's just test that proposition. Can men get pregnant?
And over.
I do take care of people that don't identify as women.
Can men get pregnant? Can men get pregnant? Do science and evidence tell us that men can get pregnant? Biological men, can they get pregnant? Can men get pregnant? And I want to know, can men get pregnant?
Now, it's true, dear Otherin, that Senator Big Mean Bully deserves most of the blame here, but if we're being honest, we also think Dr. Verma could have done much better. In short, instead of dragging out the pain of not answering, she should have simply said, yes, of course men can get pregnant. All she had to do was explain that becoming pregnant is not a result of being a man or a woman, but of having a functioning uterus. And if a person assigned female at birth now identifies as male, then by Gaia, that's a man, baby. And if he has not had any surgery or other gender-affirming care to render his uterus non-functioning, of course he can become pregnant. This is very easy to explain and would have taken far less time than the actual 5-minute exchange, and it would have been far less embarrassing for our cause and for Dr. Verma. Also, it would have been so simple because all she would have been doing is speaking the truths of science. It's not a set of chromosomes that make you a man. It's not some biological evidence in your musculature, your testosterone levels, or reproductive organs that makes you a man. It's what you believe in your heart to be true about your nature, no matter what your nature actually is, that makes you a man. Good science, like all truth, depends on the person, not the facts. Duh. Why Dr. Verma didn't just teach Josh Hawley this simple truth is beyond me, but she didn't. And so, in addition to canceling the senator, we are officially issuing 4 wokeness demerits to Nisha Verma. And she will now have to expiate those with 18 repetitions of the gender anarchist creed, 23 recitations of the Holy Rainbow Mantra, and 13 minutes of non-linguistic melodic moaning to heal her soul of the wounds inflicted by the violence of Hawley's rude questions. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, and I must confess, I really hate to have to do this, but unfortunately we must excommunicate 11 Democratic members of the House of Representatives for voting this week to overturn Biden-era restrictions on the flow rate of showerheads. Yes, I know it's very upsetting to think so many Democrats would betray their party and do the bidding of the orange man who shall not be named, who issued a clearly immoral executive order in April to make this happen. Nevertheless, the House, by a 226-197 vote, passed the Saving Homeowners from Overregulation with Exceptional Rinsing, or Shower Act. As I stand here, I still cannot fathom this decision. The bill's sponsor, Russell Fry, said, "If they want a nozzle that dribbles on their head, well then, go get one of those. If you want something that slices an orange, well then, go get one of those. That should be your choice as a consumer." No, dear Otherin. Our entire religion is based on the idea that almost nothing significant is up to the individual to decide. Conforming to the holy goals of preserving our planet requires everyone to do their part, including the vital shared experience of hydrologic suffering. Just as owning an electric vehicle, eating only sustainable food, and partaking of the holy sacrament of recycling daily, letting individuals make personal choices about water consumption is unacceptable. The only things an individual can be trusted to choose for herself are things that do not matter morally, such as what color Sharpie to use on your protest sign, whether to have your navel or your nose pierced first, which brand of herbal tea is best, or whether to terminate a pregnancy. You know, things with no moral significance. Besides, the big picture here is about more than just conserving water. It's that denying ourselves the pleasure of a properly pressurized shower is another way of reminding us in every little corner of our lives that misery is virtue, and that allowing the Holy Church of Wokeism to deny us our pleasures is proof of real devotion to the cause. And keep in mind that all you're going to get in a higher pressure shower is a cleaner body. And where would our movement be without the nasal joy of the naturally pungent aroma of progressivism gently wafting through the air here on a sultry Sunday morning? Yes, the sacred incense of our devotional time is the sweet, sweet smell of patchouli oil and BO. So let us embrace the dribbling shower. Let us celebrate the unwashed grime of our ecological devotion. And let us reject the blasphemy of high-flow faucet life and its heretical cleanliness. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, the college football playoff. Now, I know that there are a lot of people in our area who cherish college football, but allow me to explain why the CFP needs to go, or at least why it needs to be done differently. Now, obviously, we have lots of objections to college football in general, including the violence it perpetuates, the toxic masculinity, the sexism of excluding women from the field of play, but displaying the most nubile of them as objects of sexual desire in skimpy clothes and excessive makeup on the sidelines, doing the only thing conservatives think women should do, cheer for their men. I don't even want to get into the problems of games that have winners and losers, and of course, turning the skin of a poor pig into an inflatable plaything, and don't get me started on the inequities of recruiting based on name, image, and likeness deals, the enormous rich-poor gap between high-profile schools and small, less successful ones, not to mention the way football scholarships turn the important goal of acquiring an education into a secondary objective to playing time and the chance to advance to the NFL. And I'm not even concerned for the moment about the various offensive team names like the Florida State Seminoles or the Fighting Illini, the North Dakota Fighting Sioux, the Holy Cross Crusaders, and the dangerously pro-Confederacy rebels of UNLV and Ole Miss. Obviously, there are lots of problems with college football in general, but none of this addresses the real pressing problem of the college football playoff structure itself. Before we critique and improve, let's talk about the things we like about the CFP, the most obvious of which is the complete lack of consistency in the selections. Although this may drive fan bases crazy, we celebrate the unfairness of the bracket picks, like excluding Notre Dame, Vanderbilt, and BYU with 2 losses, but including Alabama with 3. We like this because it's important for people to accept a degree of irrationality imposed by unaccountable leaders without good explanation. Good followers are cultivated by being required to accept the unacceptable. We also obviously like the way that giving the highest-ranked teams a bye in the first round disadvantages them, and that serves to make the two sides more equal. And against such equity, there can be no law. Now for the problems, and maybe some remedies. First, the better team should not get home field advantage, ever. How is it following the principles of equity to boost the chances of the stronger team? If anything, the weaker team should get home field advantage to give them a better chance of winning. Also, why match the weak against the strong teams? The strong should have to beat each other. That would be fair to the weak teams. Another problem, the bowl game names. Cotton, Sugar, Orange, Alamo, Fiesta, Rose. What a terrible missed opportunity. And not just because of the crass capitalism of conjoining the bowl game name with a corporate sponsor such as in the Union Home Mortgage Gasparilla Bowl or the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl. Instead, I mean what a terrible missed opportunity to teach virtue through meaningful names. Imagine if teams in the CFP contended with each other in the Cheez-It Equality Bowl, or the Duke's Diversity Bowl, or the Harbor Freight Rainbow Bowl, the Inclusion Bowl, the Anti-Racism Bowl, the Justice Bowl, the Why Can't We All Just Get Along Bowl, or even the Whose Streets, Our Streets, or the No Justice, No Peace Bowl. Even the bowl games that aren't part of the CFP could have encouraging names like the Participation Trophy Bowl, or the Consolation Bowl, or the Attagirl Bowl, or the All Our Starters Got Drafted Bowl. As advocates of value-based naming, we really think a lot more could be done to bend the arc of bowl game universe toward justice. But probably the biggest reform of all would be a simple one. Do away with the championship entirely. Just declare that all the teams are winners in their own way by not even having them compete to declare winners. We could just all get together, chant some nice slogans of peace and unity, declare victory for everyone, and then all the fans can go home with victory in their hearts instead of with pain and the loss that all fan bases except one live with for the rest of the year. So let us begin the rebranding right away. If we can't reform football itself, let us at least make sure that nobody feels bad about themselves and that everyone feels like a winner. If we've learned anything from science in the last few decades, it's that the facts don't matter as long as we believe in ourselves. Being able to identify as winners is all we really need, regardless of whether we were identified losers at bowl games in reality. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
The Whose Streets, Our Streets Bowl.
All Our Players Got Drafted Bowl. I love that.
That's way too on the nose.
It is.
All right. Traffic, John. Tell them what's going on.
Well, nothing really right now. No accidents to report to you or delays. I-10, I-110, 90-98 are all flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. President Trump set to participate in a rural health event. This comes after his administration said last month that $10 billion would be shared among states for rural health care through what it's calling the Rural Health Transformation Program. That's designed to help smaller communities where hospitals have struggled and Americans have faced challenges getting care. And that is underway here in about an hour later this morning. The U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff says the Trump administration would like to make a nuclear deal with Iran through diplomacy rather than force. When he was asked about Iran, with all the ongoing tensions fanned by the crackdown on protesting there, Witkoff said Iran might be willing to compromise and negotiate. He said an agreement would have to address nuclear enrichment, missile stockpiles, nuclear material, and their support for proxies that go against U.S. interests. And a Utah judge listening to both sides today on whether prosecutors in the Charlie Kirk assassination case need to be disqualified due to a conflict of interest. Tyler Robinson's defense lawyers say that a key prosecutor had a family member present at the rally where Kirk is shot. They argue that communications between the family member and the prosecutor raised concerns over impartiality and the prosecution's decision to seek the death penalty.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 8:30 here on News Radio 92.3. John, you know, a story we haven't talked about at all this morning is the, what, is it 26 football or basketball players that have now all been charged in connection with point shaving schemes to,
yeah,
you know,
crazy.
Not affect the win or lose, but to affect the number of points by which you win or lose in games.
Yeah.
Do I read that
for
right?
Money,
it wasn't
yeah.
It wasn't to actually get them losses. It was just to beat the change.
To point shaving.
To beat the margin.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't matter to the school per se. It would only matter to the individual stats or the betting. You know, it's so weird when you introduce money and betting and name, image, likeness to college sports, you get cheating? What?
Fox News, I'm Therese Crowley. Minneapolis anti-ICE protest after dark. Try to tear down the fence around an ICE facility, but Patriot counter-protesters also showed up. A Latin Kings gang member arrested for looting federal weapons from an FBI vehicle the night before. As Border Czar Tom Homan follows the money, telling Fox.
There's a deep dive right now between HSI, IRS, and FBI. We know there's organized groups. We know there's funding. And we're doing a deep dive right now to identify them, follow the money, and find out who's organized this, who's inciting the violence.
A Provo court hearing today for Charlie Kirk's accused assassin, trying to get the whole Utah County Attorney's Office disqualified from the case because one of the prosecutor's teenage sons was among thousands at the campus event when Kirk was shot and killed. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. 39 degrees right now. Some sunshine here in Pensacola. Looks like a cold weekend in store. Very slight chance of snow. Our forecast on the way with Brooke Richardson here in just a couple of minutes. The city of Pensacola is moving towards regulating high-speed electric bikes. Now, this is after an incident involving a young person in Cordova Park. Mayor D.C. Reeves says the city is looking into Class 3 e-bikes. Those are the e-bikes that can hit over 28 miles an hour. And he says regulating those would be a matter of common sense.
You cannot have 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds that know no rules on the road. Be on the road, but on something at 30 miles an hour. I mean, I think that's pretty basic common sense.
The city attorney's office is looking into what regulations would be enforceable. Of course, the police department will also have to sign off on that before it goes to council. The city says it's already tried a few times to restore meal services for seniors at the E.S. Cobb Center, but the Council on Aging won't budge. Rosa Johnson was at last night's Pensacola City Council meeting. She says the nonprofit stopped serving meals at the center after an employee dispute, and that has left seniors without access to their meals program.
The reason they gave me is that they're no longer serving meals because there was a conflict between an employee from the Council on Aging, an employee from the city of Pensacola.
Deputy City Administrator Amy Miller says the city has offered numerous compromise solutions, but the Council on Aging has refused every attempt. She says the decision on where to provide meals would ultimately rest with the Council on Aging and not with the city. Well, Pensacola's red light cameras have generated more than $1.1 million in their first 5 months of operation. Acting Police Chief Kristen Brown giving that update last night. She said 30,000 red light violations have been captured, nearly 30,000. The city issued more than 14,000 tickets, collected $158 fines from about 10,000 drivers. The city's share of the money from those tickets was just over $240,000. Those cameras have already been approved for a second year. Police in Spanish Fort want to bring back a suspected con artist. It's the TikTok trickster. He was recently arrested in North Carolina. 56-year-old Brenton Fillers was captured on Tuesday after a tip to police. He's accused of wooing women on social media, then scamming them. Police Chief John Barber says Fillers has more than 30 aliases and 30 pages of arrest records across the nation. Barber said despite being a fugitive, Fillers was only being held on $15,000 bond. He has concerns that if he makes bail, he'll take off and be on the run. It's 8:34 here at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a check on our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. Plenty of sunshine today with a high near 64 degrees after a very chilly morning. Going overnight tonight, temperatures are going to drop near 50 degrees. Heading into Saturday, partly sunny skies, high near 58. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 34. We are going to be looking at a small chance of some precipitation on Sunday morning, watching closely for a chance of a few snow flurries. That chance does remain low with temperatures warming up in the afternoon near 46. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And we've got 39 degrees right now with sunshine here in Pensacola for your Friday morning. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are all flowing smoothly. No delays either. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Your money now this hour. Markets are up at the opening bell on Wall Street. The Dow is up just over a tenth of a percent right now at 49.508. S&P up about a quarter percent at 69.6203. The NASDAQ up just about a half percent at 23.636.92. Looking at that 10-year bond rate, it's up today at 4.19%. Gold prices down 1650 at 46.0720. Silver down 367 at 88.64. And Bitcoin right now up just under $200 at 95.460. Taking a look at a few of our financial headlines today. Today is day five of that nurses' strike in New York City. Lots of nurses continuing to walk picket lines there.
The hospitals are holding health care hostage. They have ability to sign off and give us the health care that we need.
We will continue to fight until we get what we deserve.
Talks have resumed between the union representing the 15,000 nurses on strike in the hospitals. They have a mediator helping with that. Well, the 2026 Detroit Auto Show opens to the public tomorrow. The show will run through Sunday. The red carpet charity preview being held tonight. The event has raised over $125 million for children's nonprofits. The Trump administration is placing a 25% tariff on certain chips that are bound for China. That applies to chips like NVIDIA's H200, which are made overseas, imported to America, then sent to other nations. This comes as China is realizing they need foreign-made chips to keep up. It's 8:37. Your next news at 9. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Are you looking for the best news in talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
The hip, hop, the hip, hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap it up. I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. That means it's the opportunity for me to talk with a couple of friends here in studio with me. Jeremy Evans, a many-time repeat offender here on The Wrap. We'd love to have him here in the studio with me. And also Ronnie Rivera, who is, I think this is just your second time?
Long time coming back. It's
been
a while.
And actually filled in for me.
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks. I did 10 straight days, 5 and 5.
That's really?
Yeah, that was about 7 years ago.
I don't. Yeah, it's so funny. We were talking about this one time, and I couldn't even remember that it was true. That's how bad my memory is or how quickly I flush things.
Well, it was a nightmare for our community, so certainly I remember that.
Worse than the snowstorm.
Exactly.
By the way, are we going to get snow this weekend? What's your call?
No.
flurries that will be gone by the time we wake up.
Yeah, I think even if you can even see snow in the air, it'll be unlikely.
A light dusting, if you will.
Yeah, but I would love to see it, but whatever. We had snow last year. I don't need snow again this year.
That was the greatest snow ever.
That was so awesome.
I don't know that we have to go to that again, do we? I mean, it was great.
PPD Chief Search. I've been talking about this a lot today. I did watch the full regular interviews from the board, the panel. This is all the, Police Chief of Destin and the city manager and stuff like that. My takeaway was we have two very, very qualified current and former chiefs from elsewhere, Grand Rapids and Tampa, with a lot of experience who show well. And we have Eric Goss, who is well-loved by the locals. The union wants him. I just don't think he has the comparable experience they have, mostly because there's other people ahead of him in seniority. But, I like Eric. If you want to vote for what the locals want, you'd vote for that. But if you want to vote for a known quantity of somebody that's got great experience, I think you probably vote for the guy from Grand Rapids, frankly. But I think it's a hard choice to make. I wouldn't want to have to make the choice because we just had a chief that was the outsider, and look at all the challenges that created for us because we didn't go with Kevin Christman. I mean, it's a hard choice for DC to make.
When you live in Escambia County, it's always, and you're looking for a police chief, it's probably always hard looking at the sheriff, right? We have an incredible sheriff here in Escambia County, so that's a difficult choice. And I'm like you. I would not want to have to make that choice if I'm D.C. That is something that I could not think about because you're right. The local favorite here, of course, is Eric Goss.
By the way, we should probably just be clear. You work for the sheriff.
I do work for the sheriff. Fair enough.
But you would have said that anyway.
I would have because he is an incredible sheriff.
Full disclosure for people who might not know you.
Fair enough. But sure enough, if you're DC, I think that's a hard choice because you have a local favorite here, hometown guy, and a lot of people are making sure that their voices are being heard in that process.
Yeah.
But you have two guys from outside that are incredibly qualified. So if you're DC, this is a tough decision, but I'm certain that he will do right for the city of Pensacola. For
you
sure.
know what I was? I had really been hoping that Eric would just kill it. That he would show so well and, that it would be easy, and it just didn't turn out to be the case, unfortunately. So,
I'll tell you just real quick, because I did have an opportunity to see him and watch him, and I actually talked to Eric a little bit offset there that evening, and he said, "How'd I do?" I said, "Well, you looked incredibly nervous, but it means that you're taking the job serious."
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever walked into a job interview where I was not incredibly nervous, and to this day, I'm an old man now, so.
Jeremy, thoughts, any?
My thoughts are kind of more back it up. Let's look at it for 30,000 feet. I think anytime you get a new police chief, I am in general not a favor of consolidation of city and county, but I do think there's some functional consolidation. And do we need a separate city police department from the county sheriff department? Do we need that extra level of administration? So my conversations with people have just kind of been on that level.
I see.
As opposed to who the person should be. Wasn't our current sheriff a former police chief?
Both he Chip was, and Tommy. Yeah, Tommy but, was also. Yeah. Tommy yeah. is the immediate past before Randall.
Yeah.
And then Chip was two chiefs ago before David Alexander, before
yeah.
Tommy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's correct. Yeah.
So we'll find out next week, And, the problem of plenty, right? But also the problem of... You might want to make a choice that's going to make people upset. Are you willing to make that choice in an election year? That's not a small thing. I don't make that like it's just purely calculating, but that's certainly going to enter the calculus. Is you've got to make the choice that makes the community happy, because if the community is not happy, it doesn't much matter if it's a good choice to begin with, because it's not a good choice. So that's.
I think you said it best. I mean, that this is a choice of plenty, right? Mm-hmm. And the city of Pensacola, in my personal opinion, has had some growth, and it looks good down there and things. Yeah, I tell people today, we are getting the city that we wanted years ago when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. There's more things to do, that kind of stuff, more outlets down there, so that kind of stuff.
Speaking of growth change, the direction for UWF, let's see, I know Jeremy, your wife teaches. Yep. You went.
Yeah.
Ronnie, you went?
No, I went to Florida State. My wife went to UWF, and my youngest child is now graduating from UWF.
Okay, yeah. I've got one kid graduated from, one kid's in, and the other one probably will go to PSC because he's into nursing, but that's most likely, but would go to UWF. Mm-hmm. It's a great school. It is a great small school.
Yeah.
It has a private school feel to it. Mm-hmm. It's always been open access, very high acceptance rate, somewhere in the 60% range. Our view of UWF was awesome. If we want a kid who wants to go to Florida but can't get in, although our kids could have gotten into Florida, they wanted to stay at UWF and stay at home, frankly. It's a commuter school. It's a very good – in Florida, every school is good for the money, frankly. Yeah. But Manny Diaz's vision for this school, and he's certainly going to be the president. He's already been – he's president-elect now.
Yeah.
Is not he doesn't emphasize bigger, but I think bigger is inevitable. He wants it to be better. He wants it to be more competitive. He wants to get more funding. He wants to renovate the Cannon Green. He wants to, you know, build more housing on campus. He wants to bring restaurants and activities on campus so that it's a campus-driven school instead of a commuter school. And I think it's fair to ask, is that a loss of identity for UWF, or is that a good thing that this is what a state school is supposed to become? Jeremy?
I mean, I think for as far as bigger size-wise, I don't think that matters as much. I do think bigger prestige-wise is important. I think the kids that are going and they're IB students and they're national merit finalists, UWF should be a first choice for those folks. My goal for our community is to have a talent pipeline that goes high school, college, workforce, that the talented people that we have here choose to stay here. And that means that the high school kids are going to college, and that means that the college kids, when they graduate, the jobs that they need to have, whether it's structural engineering, mechanical engineering, aerospace, whatever they're graduating with, that we have a market here for them to go and take those skills and work in this community as opposed to going to Atlanta or Jacksonville or Orlando or wherever. And so I think as a holistic viewpoint, it's what do we need to do to fill the jobs that we currently need filled in our community, and what do we need to build to fill the jobs we want to have in this community?
I love the vision, but a school that is going to be the first choice school, for example, for IB students, and is genuinely going to be that school, is not going to be the school for the other top but not tip-top students from Escambia County. You can't really have both, right?
I mean, yes and no. I think that the one thing that UWF is uniquely positioned to do is there are very few doctoral programs. You don't have a ton of like graduate research assistants. Right. What does that mean? Undergraduates do the research assistants. And so you have the opportunity to immediately go in on campus and be involved with a professor and getting your hands into the work. And I don't think they should lose that. I think that is one of the key things that UWF has that makes it unique in our state. And I don't think they should lose that. Maybe some choice doctoral programs, some programs that really attract both the highest level, like those kids that are like, I want to go be a doctor of whatever. Those kids should have the opportunity to be here and stay home. But I think you can do both. You just have to be calculated, surgical, in what programs you choose to grow and how you choose to change.
And my concern has been that some of these things might inadvertently just lead to growth and growth for its growth. He says that's not what he wants, but that would change the nature of the school too. Hang on for just a second. Ronnie, John's got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now or delays. Everything is looking good. John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Ronnie, thoughts?
I think a couple of things. I think UWF has always had a feel of an open door professor policy, right? And not all universities have that.
Like a small or a private school.
Yeah. I went to Florida State and it does not have, or did not have when I was there. And I went to Texas A&M graduate school and they do not have that. You always got to set an appointment. And I'm sure you do at UWF as well, but it doesn't have that feeling. It has the feeling that you can walk into your professor's office at almost any time of the day or night and ask a legitimate academic question and get a great answer and response. That being said, I do not think there's a problem with growth as long as it's strategic. It does have to be strategic in nature. We don't want we don't want a Wawa on campus. Well, maybe we do. But we don't want things on campus that we just don't want. And I think the growth of a campus has to be strategic in nature. But there's room for growth out there. There's always been room for growth.
Well, there's certainly plenty of room for growth. There's plenty of land to be made of.
Yeah.
But here's – okay, I'm going to take the pessimist sort of not worst case, but, you know, here's the question. Mm-hmm. If UWF became USF or UCF, 50,000, 70,000 kids – which is certainly a possible future. I mean, they were 10,000 at one point, or 16,000 at 1.2. Would you feel like that was a win or a loss?
I think that would be a win for our community. I think anytime we get an opportunity to bring people to Pensacola, Florida, and show them what a wonderful place it is, they're going to want to live here and pay taxes here. And I just think it's a great opportunity to bring new people into our community and say, hey, look, this is where we are. Let's make it all go together.
Jeremy?
I think it's a win, but I think it has to be, we have to build for it before it comes. Because if it comes before
now,
you build
Jeremy,
for it, it becomes a
you
nightmare.
You know that is never going to happen in Pensacola.
Yeah.
You know that fill in the blank concurrency of any sort is never going to happen in Pensacola.
Yeah,
come on.
I do think the one thing that I do think is important is if you're talking about growing, you're talking about changing campus.
Yeah.
What we think in this room should not matter. It's what matters to the 10,000 plus students that are on campus right now.
And the ones who are in grade school and middle school now.
Yeah. Like, what is it that you want to have on this campus? What do we not have? What should we be building towards? Mm-hmm. Because that's who we need to be appeasing, not the people in this room or folks downtown or any of those kind of people. It's the people who are currently living, residing, or will be in the future who are living, working, residing on going to school there. Those are the people that shed the loudest voice. And what does, as we grow, how do we grow? What would you like to see happening on this campus?
And this to me is a sort of a shade of the broader question we're always asking about Pensacola, which is Pensacola is not a small town and Pensacola is not a large town. Pensacola is a medium-sized town that feels historically very small in a good way. Mm-hmm. And we kind of struggle with what future do we want? Do we want it to be big and busy and traffic and, you know, high priced everything? And I mean, you know, what do we want for the future? And it's a feeling like, yeah, we want more people and their money, but we don't want more people and their problems. And the, you know, the changing of the nature of downtown Palafox is great. Then Palafox becomes too expensive. And, you know, the problems, right? Yeah. The parking, all of that.
A couple of things before we move on from UWF and just tell you about UWF a little bit, in my opinion. My daughter goes there now, and she's graduating. And when she was graduating in high school, she looked at Tennessee. She looked at UF. She looked at Florida State, and she looked at a lot of places. And at the time, the money was just right at the University of West Florida. She got a lot of scholarships to go, and so she stayed. But one of the things that she wanted to get done when she was in, during her college years was, like a lot of kids, she wants that college experience.
Yeah.
She wanted to go away to college.
Yeah.
We live out towards Perdido Key. It took her about 6-7 months before she finally figured out she's actually away from college. I mean, she is.
Right.
That side of town from Perdido Key area is a different world. It's a different world altogether. And so she absolutely has had a way college experience. That's one of them. They say
so. She lives on campus.
She did. She actually just moved home to save some money now. Okay. She's lived there for 3 years, enjoyed it, enjoyed all the amenities around that area for 3 years. Loved it.
An on-campus college versus a commuter college is they're fundamentally different, in my opinion. The experience for the student is fundamentally different.
And I think that it in the 20 plus years that I've lived here, my wife has worked there, it has gone from purely a commuter campus with the Pizza Hut dorms that housed almost nobody to, I would say now it's a hybrid.
Yeah.
And I think it should probably stay a hybrid of both of those things. But I think what you're getting into, this has been, since I've lived here for 20 plus years, this conversation of how does Pensacola grow? If you look to our west and Mobile, it's kind of industrial growth that's down there. You look to our east and Destin, it's tourism growth.
Yeah.
And the folks that are here, they don't want either of those things.
Definitely.
And so even when we've had opportunity for the jobs that we say that we want to have, like I have felt at times, it's been pulling teeth to get Navy Federal to where it is. And I think everybody loves what Navy Federal's done to our economy. Mm-hmm. But to get it to happen to where it was a challenge. I mean, and OLF 8 is kind of done now. But, I mean, how long was that a challenge to figure out getting that
process?
Did
you just say OLF 8 is kind of done now?
Well, I mean, it's...
That's optimistic.
It's I think the Navy Federal part of OLF 8 is done now.
Yeah.
And what to do with the rest of it is what it is. But Palafox doesn't look like it does if Navy Federal's not here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that has changed our community. And those are the kind of jobs we say we want to have. But even when we get the jobs that we say we want to have, we're not really happy with it.
And you know, not just that, but you know, as you mentioned before, do we have the right employees to fill those jobs? Are we doing the production of the correct human, you know, the human resource production that it needs to happen? And the answer is not really. Not yet. Not entirely. I mean, we're trying real good. Let's switch topics a little bit. I don't know. There's so many things going on at the national level. You know what? None of this is a passion for you, Jeremy, so I'll ask you because your wife is so invested in this and you are too. I thought Ben Albritton, the Senate president, gave a great speech to open session where he talked not only openly about faith and faith values guiding, but he talked about the importance of the Senate in slowing down things and being the chilling effect on the, you know, wild populism of the House. You know, gridlock is the goal in America. That was one part of what I saw this week. And then DeSantis, in his speech, gave a really wonderful opening set of remarks about, you know, freedom and liberty and constitutional republics and limited government only work for, you know, a moral, he didn't say all this, but he's getting at this, only, you know, work for a educated, moral, religious people. That was the vision of the founders, is that not everybody, not every kind of human is properly suited for a democracy like ours. Are we doing enough to make the right kind of people that will understand these things and be the citizens of the future for a limited government constitutional republic?
I mean, I feel like we are, I feel like we're not doing enough that when our young people are graduating from high school and getting into college, that they know how their government works. Mm-hmm. I think we have room to grow there. It's amazing. I have a daughter, she's in fifth grade. Yesterday we had this conversation. She finished whatever she was doing early. When they finish early, they can go grab a book off the shelf and read the book. She came home, and on the way home, she was telling me all about how the pocket veto works. And she was amazed by this. And she's in fifth grade. And the conversation we had around the house last night was, if we were to go to 12th graders, mm-hmm. how many 12th graders could have a conversation with me about the pocket veto and how it works and why it works?
Even know what it is, yeah. Let alone be interested enough to be passionate about the idea.
And granted, I have a passion for politics, civics. My wife has a PhD in political science, teaches it. So in our household, conversations happen not just about what's on Fox News, but also at a higher level about what's going on. And so it is a passion of mine, and I am blessed that of all the passions of mine, that's one she's picking up on. So I do think that it is vital that young people understand how government works, and I have no problem with people exercising the freedom of speech like we're seeing around the country in some of these places. But how do you turn that into effective response to your government? How do you turn that into, we are going to do a campaign, we're going to do this, we're going to go to our city council meeting, we're going to go to do all those things. Mm-hmm. And how few people participate in their government, not just by voting, but like you go to a county commission meeting, how many people are there to talk about something that aren't the people that are always there to talk about something? Right. That are just there because,
and it's not a particular issue that flashed up on that time, but it's, you know, routinely interested in the business of government because the county commission and the city council have way more impact on your life than anything you ever see happening on Fox News
and even
or CNN, or in national politics has very little effect on your life compared to them.
Even if my viewpoint is on the wrong side of what the popular people want,
right.
I would be so much happier to see everybody participating in the process, mm-hmm. because you get a much more accurate response to what government should be to represent the people if the people are actually participating in the process.
Yeah, it's only representative if the people are actually making it be that. We'll get back to this in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
No accidents to report to you or delays. Everything looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
What I see, Ronnie, on Facebook is horrifying. And I don't even go on Twitter very often. It's worse. What I see is supposedly the people that are most interested, because that's where they play in politics, seem to be the dumbest group of people.
Well,
see, look, there's contempt, yeah, there's arrogance, there's incivility, there's very little what I would consider a nuanced awareness of all the elements of the issue. There's just jab and parting shot and contempt and error. It does not encourage me about the future of civil society. That's where I'm coming from.
I think, and you and I have talked about this offset here before. I don't think that people, it seems like people do not understand that Facebook is really much more about promulgation opposed to communication, right? You don't want to, if you set a thing out there, people are going to criticize you no matter what. And that's not the way to change public policy. I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. I have not seen that yet. I have not seen somebody make an incredible post and it turn into public policy, although it could happen. It certainly could happen. I don't think people understand the Constitution, and I don't think people read the Constitution. I mean, are they moral? Do they read the Bible? I don't know. It doesn't seem that way right now. There seems to be a lack of reading skills in this country, not open bashing. I mean, that's where we're at. The other thing is you kind of see it in these protests often, right? People want to change a public policy. And so they go to their corner and they protest an issue. It can happen, and it has happened previously in our country in the 60s, right? Those things have happened.
Well, I would even say the George Floyd protests affected policy for sure.
You think it did?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I can get there with
I'm not sure they would think they won. I'm not sure we won as a country, but did it affect things? It definitely did.
Okay, fair enough. Did it change the hearts and minds of people? Maybe that's a better way to say it.
No, I agree with that. Yeah. That's fair.
And I think that's where it often falls. People do not read the Constitution. They are opposed to something, whatever that something is. They take up arms immediately. They find two or three friends. They write about it on Facebook, and then they get on the corner and protest. And unfortunately, really, what they end up protesting is local law enforcement officials, which yeah. live in your communities. They go to your churches. Their kids go to your schools, all those things, and they target local law enforcement officials. Unfortunately, a guy that's come in to do a shift and keep his community safe, and they're protesting against this guy, and he all of a sudden becomes the face of social problems
in this
country.
My biggest concern, I think, if I can say it this way, is that as a country, we are full of people who know just enough to be dangerous.
Amen.
And I mean, every day I'm trying to fix this. But, you know, just little old me in Pensacola, right? So, Jeremy Evans, Ronnie Rivera, thank you so much for the time. Thanks to you for the community being available. And old man injuries hit us all, Jeremy.
Thank you, guys. Be safe.
All right, Meg's up next.
Stream us at News Radio.